Possession number 9253, reel 24.
Mr. Jack Dorgan, reel 24. After the first day, in the succeeding days of the rest, what would you do during the day? What other... besides the morning parade?
Well, you know, I cannot say we did anything specific, no. I've never given any thought. But certainly after 5 o'clock we were finished, and we used to all dress up for 5 o'clock, and we used to go out looking for Stanimers and any cottage where they sold chips and eggs and so on. And that's all we used to think about, so more food, because the food, you only got 3 meals a day, you know. You got your breakfast, dinner, and the dinner was always the same, you know.
What were the meals then?
Well, in the morning, was supposed to be... you see, when you were back west, you had your battalion cooks that prepared the food, and you had coffee, often without milk, but you just had to put up with it, you know. It was wartime, but you just had to put up with it. Coffee and tea, of course. It was tea for those who wanted it. So you had your choice of tea or coffee, and then you had a plate where you received a couple of pieces. If you're lucky, you got a couple of pieces of bacon fried and a couple of slices of dip bread. Good, thick slices, you know. And then for midday meal, it was not soup,
stew.
Always stew. Not raw. And you got a cup of tea or coffee if you wanted it.
And what was the third meal you got?
Third meal was tea. Well, you're issued with bread. Generally got bread. And always tins of butter, tins of jam, different kinds of jam. And tea, that was all. Yes.
But this left you hungry?
No. I remember we fed up. But we're young fellas. And that meal, the third meal, was, you know, between 4 o'clock, 4:30. And it's a long time from 4:30 in the afternoon till breakfast the next morning. So we're always... And it gave us something to do as well.
What do you remember about the estaminets where you used to go then?
Well,
what would they look like?
There seemed to be, in every little village, there would be a blacksmith shop. There was always a blacksmith shop. And we always made for the blacksmith shop. I always seem to remember that. Because we knew that in the blacksmith shop, there would be a farm couple, man and woman. They would be prepared to the chips. You see, there's plenty of potatoes. Where they got the grease from, I don't know. And where they got the eggs from, I don't know. But there must have been a big importation of eggs. I remember the eggs used to be in egg boxes that were about 3'6" long, an egg box, and deep enough for 2 layers of eggs, and about 2 foot wide. These wooden, thin, very thin wood. That wood was priceless to us. We used to buy the wood off the couple and break it up into pieces and put it in your pack, and we carried out. Me, I always had some of this wood because it was very thin wood and could easily light. Burn, you know, for to make a fire.
For the front line.
For when you're in the front line, yes. So we he always went, as I said, for the blacksmith shop. The blacksmith shop always seemed to be the vocal point, albeit also these astronomers always beforehand. And if there were any shape, the peasants used to build them up again, you know. Sometimes they didn't have a roof on. But you could buy chips and eggs there. Always chips and eggs. I remember once I had 6 eggs with chips. I must have been hungry. I always had the money to buy it.
That, you never ate anything else at the Estaminets?
Because there was nothing else to buy. That's all there was.
What would you drink there? What would you drink there?
Beer. The Belgian beer.
Even yourself?
Very mild,
were
you know.
Still teetotal then, or?
Hmm?
Were you still teetotal then? Would you drink the beer, or?
I don't know what I did now. Yes, I would drink some. Oh, yes, you didn't consider that as beer. It wasn't, you know, really. It was very mild, you know. Oh, yes. Oh, yes, you had to drink something with it, yes. You didn't always get tea, you know. You know, they had no means of tea. They had coffee because they grew their own coffee, you know, trees or whatever they call them.
How long would you be in an estaminet? You know, what would an evening in the estaminet be like? What would happen?
Oh, well, you just went in and you got fed and you were out again. Or was somebody else wanting to be in? Oh, all the different regiments would be exploring, you see.
How many places would there be in this, in a typical blacksmith shop at Staminet? How many places to eat? How many British soldiers could they feed at one time?
Well, sometimes there was no seats at all. Some of the places, no seats at all. Though, mind you, I was in one where there was a lot of benches. You know, a lot of benches in. That had been homemade, you know, from timber.
So they wouldn't take a lot, none of them would take a lot of troops?
Oh, no, oh, no, no, oh, no. No, you moved out.
You wouldn't stay in.
Well, you just went in for your chips and eggs, and when you got them, you were out again.
So to you, the main function was food, not to have a drink?
No, oh, no, no.
Would any of the troops go looking for a drink? I mean, wine?
No, no. You've got to remember, it's all countryside. There's no towns, you know. You see, all the villages were in ruins, you know. No, none of them had any second floor, you know, and old ruins, yes.
So there was no drunkenness at all?
Oh, no, nothing like that. No drunkenness, no.
What other recreations would you have? While you were, you know, after 5 o'clock, what else would you do to keep yourself amused?
Well, on a fine summer day, we played bingo. And also, we had our shirts off and trousers off, and while the bingo men were coming around calling the bingo, we would be killing the lice on our clothes. Oh, that was a common practice. Common practice. Every day, you know, afternoon. When you're out resting, you weren't supposed to leave your area till 5 o'clock. But you never did anything in the afternoon. There was no marching or anything like that. No. You had parades in the morning. But the parades were in the morning just to emphasize the discipline. That was all. And then in the afternoon, we would just get out, and if it was a nice day, sunny day especially, you see 200 or 300 men, all the whole darn company out there, you know, either kill them with a finger, with your thumbs, or burning them, or using insect powder, you know, going up the seams of your shirts and your trousers and all that. But you just sort of kept them down, that's all, because we're still there the next day.
So it was almost a recreation?
Yes, in a way. Yeah, it was more than a recreation, you know. You felt that you were doing something for your own, you know, to enable you to carry on without having to scratch.
Were there any other games you played besides Housey Housey? Was there any cards or Crown and Anchor or anything like that?
Oh, yes, fellas used to play cards, yes. I was always card players. I didn't play cards.
What about organised sports or
nothing like that.
No football, cricket?
No, nothing, no. One day just passed the same as the other day, just the next day. And then the only change was when we went back up into trenches again. And where you went up, well, matter for the gods. You didn't know where you were going.
Did any of the troops miss women a lot, you know?
Because women?
Women,
no.
Because
no.
Didn't cause any bother.
There was no women there, just the old... You see, in Belgium, we were in Belgium all the time. In Belgium, all the able-bodied men and women were on active service of some kind. You never saw a young woman. The only women you saw were old. The only women you saw, and children.
How did you get on with the Belgians as people?
Well, as far as I'm aware, all right. I never came in contact with any, except when I was in buying chips or eggs. That's right.
Did you ever visit Toc H when you were in that area?
Yes. I didn't realise it was Toc H, but we heard about a place in Popperin, that's a town about 10 miles from Ypres, a Belgian town. A very, very old-fashioned town, I remember it. Very, very narrow streets. Now, Ypres itself is a town, has wide streets and a big marketplace. So as Poperinge has a big, wide, open space, more than one, in fact. Whether they call any of the marketplaces, I don't know. But there was quite a number in Poperinge, wide open places here and there. But we went there, me and two pals once. Twice we went down into Poperinge when we were in trenches near, on our days off. Because we heard you could have a cup of tea and read English newspapers. And also, it was used as a chapel for those who were in need of a bit of religion. Well, we arrived in this narrow street, inquired, and we found this place, Talbot House, they called it. It was named after somebody, Talbot, who provided the money for Tubby Clayton. Tubby Clayton was the parson that was there. He was an army padre. And I remember on both occasions I went in, only a few weeks apart, the ground floor was just full of rubbish and not used at all. You went up some narrow stairs, and there was Tubby Clayton and some Belgian people helping them, and they were providing tea, and no eats, just tea, cups of tea, and free, and on the tables was English newspapers. And he just sat there and he came around and talked to us. And then...
Do you remember anything about him?
Pardon?
Do you remember anything about Clayton?
No. Can't remember nothing really about him. I just remember that he was an English padre in army clothes, of course. He's part of the army. And the next floor, I don't know, but you passed, when you went up the stairs again, the third floor, second floor it is, there was a ladder, right up a plank, up against the wall, straight up and down, and you climbed up this to the top story. And the top story, there were some benches and an altar. That's all there was. And Tubby Clayton held services there. I was never at any services. I did go up on both occasions just to have a look around, and that was all. And I never considered myself as a religious man, and I was not in need of any religious talks or nothing. But I appreciated the fact that there we could have a read an English paper and have a cup of tea. And that was my acquaintance with Talbot House, which now is called Tockage.
Were there any other voluntary services in operation at the time? Did the Red Cross or anybody have things? No,
except the Salvation Army.
What were they?
Salvation Army was everywhere. Always. Salvation Army. I have a great respect for the Salvation Army. But in Ypres, yes, Salvation Army were busy. And in fact, you know, all the way through my service life, I was coming in contact with Salvation Army, always providing tea and any volunteer help you needed.
How did they provide the tea? What sort of establishment?
I have recollections of the Salvation Army taking my mother and father. Yes, taking my mother and father over to France, where my brother Tom was lying dangerously ill. It was in 1917 when I was on Class W at home. I'd been wounded, convalescent, and was sent home to work under Class W to work in the coal mines. One morning, War Office sent word that brother Tom was in the Royal Naval Division, was lying wounded in France, severely wounded, and that the Salvation Army could make arrangements for them to go over to France and stay at the same hospital where Brother Tom was lying dangerously ill. So I went down to London. The Salvation Army officer and my mother and father. I wanted to go myself, went to the War Office in London, wouldn't allow me to go. But when I was at the War Office, I got permission from my next brother, my younger brother, Nicol, who was in the Durham Light Infantry, to get permission from his regiment, which was in France at the time, to go to the hospital where his brother, our brother Tom, was lying wounded while my mother and father were there. My mother and father and the Salvation Army officers arrived in this hospital in France where Tom was lying dangerously ill. Nicol came out of the trenches. He had 4 days' permission and he stayed in the hospital. With mother and father, who were there for 10 days. And at the end of 4 days, Nicol, of course, had to go back and rejoin his regiment, the Durham Light Infantry. On his way back to the trenches, while mother and father, who had to stay longer at the hospital, 10 days and all, going up into the trenches, before he reached the trenches, he was killed by a shell. We were told by an officer, by a sergeant of Nicol's regiment, that it was one of our own shells that dropped short on the trenches and hit the communication trench, and Nicol was killed going up into the front line. Mother and father, at the end of their 10 days, came back from that hospital, not knowing that Nicol was killed, of course. We didn't know for some days even after they got back home, and then the War Office sent word, your son Nicol Dorgan had been killed on such and such a date. Comparing dates, we saw that he had been killed while mother and father were still in the hospital. So I have a great respect for the Salvation Army.
They ran the hospital, did they?
Yes.
What about, did they have any stalls or anything like that where they gave out tea? Did you encounter that sort of thing?
No.
As far as you were concerned, they just ran the hospital?
There, on that occasion, yes. I can't say that...
You didn't see them doing anything else?
No, don't think so.
Were there any other voluntary organisations you encountered?
Oh, no, never saw anything. No, mind you, when I got wounded and I was lying on the stretcher at Southampton, there was an organisation.
No, I mean on the Western Front.
Well, I was wounded, yes. Okay. I was on my... after I'd been wounded.
So, I believe there was one incident where you saw a sergeant being stripped of his stripes.
That's right.
Was that while you were out of the line?
Oh, yes.
Tell me about that.
Yes, well, we were paraded one morning, our battalion, the 7th Northumberlands, and there'd been a court-martial. I remember that morning because the only officer on duty on parade that morning in this field, when we were back at Weston out of the trenches, was the adjutant. The only officer in the whole of the parade. We were under the direction of our own NCOs. And I was our... what they call him, the sergeant, police sergeant, or a special name that you have for a police sergeant. Oh, well. Standing up in the front was a sergeant from Berwick who had had a court-martial. Can't remember his name. And the court-martial had... given their verdict, he'd be deprived of his stripes. And the adjutant, with a pair of scissors, stepped forward and cut the sergeant's stripes from both his arms. Then pulled another paper out of his pocket. The adjutant spoke and said, "Sergeant Sparrow, you are under arrest." The provost sergeant, that's what they called the police sergeant, provost sergeant, Ted Sparrow, of our company, he says, "You have committed perjury at this sergeant's court-martial, and you too are to be deprived of your stripes." And with his scissors, he cut the stripes from Sergeant Sparrow, or provost sergeant, who had no knowledge of being, up to that moment, that he was to be deprived of his stripes. The other sergeant knew the court-martial had deprived him of his stripes, so he was prepared for it. But Sergeant Sparrow, or provost sergeant, no knowledge of it at all until that moment. There, in front of the whole of the battalion, he was stripped of his stripes.
Was that a fairly humiliating experience? Was that fairly humiliating?
Humiliating for him, yes. He was a private. Both of them were privates after that, yes.
Did the men feel sorry for them, or what?
Well, you know, the Berwick man, the Berwick sergeant, I didn't know anything about, because he was in a different company to us. But Ted Sparrow, our own provost sergeant, I knew very well, because he was a native of Ashendon. And none of us felt a penny worth of sorrow for him. None of us. The most badly liked fellow in the battalion. He took advantage. This Ted Sparrow took advantage of all the fellows he knew from Ashendon, not merely in according to the letter of the law as regards army procedure, But wherever he could, he made it unpleasant for everybody. So Ted Sparrow, when he was stripped of his stripes, nobody felt any sympathy for him.
Were there any other disciplinary punishments in operation while you were, you know, at rest? Did you have field punishment number one ever? Or?
Oh, yes. Have I got time to tell you about the regimental sergeant major losing his rations?
Yes.
Well, then, when we're back resting one time, me being attached to B Company, and also, of course, No Man's Land, I was often, when I wasn't with B Company, A Company it was really, attached to headquarters. So one day, the adjutant says, "Dorgan, provide a party to go down and seek the rations." We were back just resting behind the line. We now selected a party, I forget now how many, to go down and seek the rations for the whole of the battalion. When they arrived, of course they went down when hours of darkness came along, and they go down to where the quartermaster was there with his horse transport and wagons with the rations, and they would collect the rations for the battalion, all in sandbags, two sandbags tied together so he could put around his shoulder. And came back, and I handed the reporter to me, because I was a sergeant in charge that night, and handed the rations over to the cooks. And that was that, as I thought. Then later, the regimental sergeant major, his name was Casey, regimental sergeant major Casey, the only man from the regular army, there was only two regular soldiers in the whole of our battalion, our quartermaster, who was a lieutenant, was an old army officer, and regimental sergeant major Casey, a typical regimental sergeant major. He strutted about, he was plump, short-legged, red-featured, and carried a walking stick. That's all he ever carried, a short piece of walking stick. And he says, "What about my rations, Sergeant?" He treated me as if I was nobody. He was very badly liked. I said, "Your rations? I've passed. I handed all the rations over to the cooks." He says, "My rations. My ration bag." I said, "Never heard of it." He says, "You better." So I go out and in the working party, in the ration party I had sent out was Mick Bell, my own particular pal at home in